minutes after the... Oh, 1 minute after the 11 o'clock hour. There we go. I think we're all screwed up waiting to get this Sean Payton press conference going, courtesy of DenverBroncos.com. This is it. Kind of a historic day, perhaps, in Broncos country. The 19th head coach, the 19th coach for the Denver Broncos, Sean Payton, getting ready to step up to the podium. Talk about, hopefully, shed some light on what he's going to bring, more on his philosophy. And I doubt he's going to make his announcements as far as the coaching staff and everything, but I will be interested to see or to hear what he has to say about Russell Wilson and how that's all going to work out, too. So, very interesting stuff, man. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. We'll talk Sean Payton today. We'll air as much of that as we seem to think we should, I guess. I just want to hear, you know, press conferences are always pretty good. So I don't think we're going to walk away from this with, you know, breaking news updates or anything like that. But we'll probably walk away, hopefully, with more of an idea of how he views the team. Of how he views the history of this franchise. Because make no mistake about it, this is a historic day because this is a big name. One of the, I mean, it's probably the biggest name the Broncos have ever brought in. Mike Shanahan earned his name with the Broncos. So by the time he was out, it wasn't like, you know, they didn't bring him in as a stud. They brought him in as an offensive mastermind hopeful, but he hadn't done anything. I mean, the Raiders fired him, and then he comes over to Denver and all that. This is the biggest name. The John Fox was a pretty big name. You know, he went to a Super Bowl with daylight coming. He got Adele home. That was a big name, but not anything like what you're seeing with Sean Payton. We can argue about the draft capital that you gave up, all of that, his past with Bounty Gate and the Saints and the way he left New Orleans. We can argue about that until we're blue in the face, but the one thing we can all agree on is that this is the biggest name. So we have it now ready. All right, is Sean Payton going up or is it Greg Penner? Okay, we're going to go to it right now. Here it is, the Sean Payton introductory press conference, courtesy of DenverBroncos.com.
I first want to thank my family that's here. My wife, Skyline, she's, you know, someone's going to ask the question, why'd you get back in, Coach? And so maybe I can answer that right now. Skyline, when you work only Sundays in the Fox studio, and then you have Monday through Saturday, there's a point at which she looked at me and said, when are you getting back to work, buddy? And so, you know, we all kind of live with this idea of we're gonna work to this golden spot, and then we're gonna retire, and it's gonna be wonderful. And we're sold that on TV a lot. And my prior owner, the late Mr. Benson, used to tell me how overrated retirement was. And I kind of feel where he was coming from a little bit after just 1 year of whatever that was. So thank you for being patient with me. Both my children are here. Megan, who's the oldest, a graduate from Pepperdine. She's in sports journalism. My son, Connor, who's a senior at TCU. He's a coaching assistant there. And Megan's fiance, Chris Titone, they're getting married this June. I tell the story about my two kids. Connor, who's getting into scouting, he wants to eventually become a professional scout, maybe a general manager. My daughter Megan, obviously, in journalism. And I think they both decided Connor, one, wants to hire and fire the coach, and Megan wants to cover the hiring and the firing of the head coaches. And so they've seen my career from afar, a lot of moves, but a lot of great memories and championships. And, Chris, we're looking forward to you joining our family this June. I want to thank the ownership group here present today. It was a longer process this year, I think, for most clubs relative to the new protocols. But my first meeting with Greg and George and Ms. Condi on a Tuesday in Los Angeles at 10 o'clock went for 4.5 hours. It was fantastic. And then later, Kerry, I really appreciate the time. I was a backup in the Fox studios a week and a half ago, just in the event something happened in Philadelphia with the feed. And so they keep a backup plan. And I had a great visit with Kerry, her father, Rob, and that was really good. Damani, it's been a pleasure meeting you. and you're from Chicago, so that's a good start with me. We have this synergy, at least being from the same home city. Along those lines, and I'm going to jump around here, that to me, everyone has a job to do, and they all tried to jump inside what I was looking for. On one of the Fox broadcasts, I said it pretty clearly. Ownership was important to me. I had been exposed to a great ownership group in New Orleans, and I think it's appropriate for me to thank Mrs. Benson. Obviously, her late husband, Tom Benson, was the owner when I first arrived there, and then the general manager, Mickey Loomis. So what I knew for 16 years was functional, wasn't easy, but it was functional, and it was supportive, and it was respectful, and it was teamwork at its best, and that was Mickey Loomis, who I didn't know at the time, who later became a very close friend, and then Mr. Benson and Mrs. Benson. That triangle to me was most important in this process. And obviously, the players, the city, all of those things factor in. I think the second most important thing to me was the passion. Is football important here? And it obviously is, right? I mean, it's a city that's had great success, three championships, and a number of Super Bowl appearances. That wasn't present when I went to New Orleans. Now, when you're a first-time head coach, you're out running 100 miles an hour looking for that first opportunity. And so, you know, you don't sit back and you don't have that luxury of being more selective. But I felt really good about my early conversations with Greg, and then having a chance later to meet Kerry and Condi and George. George and I, man, we've competed against each other, our clubs, for years. And I just, there's so many people that I know that are close with him, and it kept coming back the same way. So throughout the process of interviewing, it still came back to that triangle of front office, ownership, and then passionate fan base. I know it was a longer period of time that most of us weren't familiar with, and part of that is because of the protocol change. There's still two clubs, actually, that are in the midst of making their decisions. The other unique thing with this, and you all know this, was the complication relative to compensation for me to become available through the Saints. And that's, again, I go back to thanking Mrs. Benson, Dennis Lauscher, the president there, is a great friend and ally, and Mickey Loomis, and then Mickey and George. I mean, George and I would speak, like, you know, for a period of 3-4 days, this went on and on, the negotiations. Obviously, the same way with Greg and his wife, Carrie. So patience was necessary, you know, and I think in the end it worked out exactly as I had hoped, and I think exactly as the Broncos ownership had hoped. And now, it wasn't easy, but nevertheless, nothing ever is when you go through something like this. I'm looking forward to meeting many of you, working with you, and understanding the jobs you have. Man, you've been fortunate. You guys have covered, many of you, three Super Bowl championships and countless playoff games, and my hope is that you're going to be covering more of those with our leadership. There's a lot of hard work that's involved. That really began last week. I know a lot of you have questions about coaches, and I'll probably, you know, not answer any of those questions, just to tell you that we're working hard to put the right staff together. Here's one thing that I think is important, and I shared this throughout the process. Oftentimes in our league, organizations want to win the day when they hire their head coach. They want to win the day during the draft. I've never seen a GM or a head coach come down and say, we didn't get our guy. You know, gosh dang it, someone just jumped in front of us and we had to settle on Bill. You know, you don't say that, right? You say, we got our guy. What's most important, although obviously hiring the right people and drafting the right people are important, but ultimately it's what we do during the season. That's how we're measured. And so from experience, having gone through this one other time, in 2006, there were tarps on our walls. The team had just come back from San Antonio. The hospitals weren't open. our problems then were so much different. And so for us, for a short period of time, as we hired staff and coaches, you know, we'd celebrate each one. Like, we'd have a cake if we got a coach to say, yes, he's coming. You know, first there was three, then there was five, and then we slowly put a staff together. And I'll never forget that group. We've actually celebrated that group. Those guys, they came when many didn't want to come. And now, mind you, everyone came for a promotion. We weren't winning any lateral. You know, if someone had the same job offered somewhere else, there's a good chance they took that job. But that's the fun part. Like, that's why we do this. And so the banners and the trophies and the media and the money, those all come with it. But the journey, and here's what happens when you win one, it's like you have that evening, and then the very next day you get right back on the treadmill and you start chasing the chicken again. It begins again. And so it's hard to replace that when you're removed from it. And so for a year working with Fox, man, I couldn't wait for Sundays. That was my football fix. That was the day that I got to at least get a little bit of what I've been missing. My clothes I'd lay out the night before. I was the first one in. I'd wear them out. You know, questions. And, you know, I had the morning show with Carissa. She was fantastic. I did the second show, rotated with Jimmy Johnson, Bill, and Eric Shanks, the whole crew there. That they were so fantastic. And then sit in the green room and watch ATV screens and basically watch a whole day of football. The first round of games, the second round of games, 5 a.m., and then go home at 5:30. And regardless of how my narrative worked out, whether I'd predicted things that were happening, whether I had a good day, what have you, you drive home and there's nothing that replaced the feeling of winning. It just didn't. And so off in the distance, I use this analogy, it was a little bit like that racetrack that you could smell the gasoline, you heard the cars running, you could see the lights, you knew you were there, and you know what there is like. It's hectic, it's loud, it's busy, it's noisy, it's not always fun. There's challenging times, there's losses, there's wins. But every day you'd look and you'd hear it and you're thinking, man, I can't wait to get back. And so I appreciate one more time the Walton Penner Ownership Group for having me back, and look forward to making you proud. Look forward to working with everyone in here and building that winning culture. It's something that it's not easy. It's something that is daily, monthly, and it's something that can slide or slip quickly. I feel like we did that in New Orleans. The first year, our second season, we played in the Hall of Fame game. And so that's in Canton. We had a chance to tour the Hall of Fame. Now, we were playing the Steelers, who were celebrating their 75th anniversary. And that's a little bit of a, like, you get there and I'm like, man, who signed us up for this game? There's nothing but, like, Steeler fans, 75-year anniversary, a bunch of terrible towels, and then we had a couple Saints fans. So we did the tour of the museum, and I talked to our team that night about the tradition. I don't know how many Steelers are in the Hall of Fame. Similar here. There's a ton of representation. But at that time, there weren't any Saint players in the Hall of Fame. Since then, there have been a number. But I remember telling that team, that first 06 team, 07 team, that we look at Pittsburgh as a certain team that's one of the iconic teams, winning programs or franchises, just like we would see the Broncos. And New Orleans wasn't viewed that way. And I said, we will be soon. And what I love is that my son and my daughter and anyone in their generation would look at the Saints as a team that you had to contend with year in and year out for the last 16 years, won a lot of games. And that's what it's about. And so hopefully today we've won this day, and hopefully we win the draft. But more importantly, it's winning in the fall and building a championship that this city and most of you have had a chance to experience. So we'll go from there. In front of this table.
All right, he's taking pictures right now. So we're going to get back. We want to air some of the questions. You're listening to the Sean Payton introductory press conference, courtesy of DenverBroncos.com, here on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. Normally the whole show, of course. Tell me when the pictures are done, and then we'll get some of the questions. Anything stand out to you guys? Shoot us a text, your reaction, whatever. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. I mean, Angel, it's all well and good. That's fine. He does show that he's the adult in the room. And listen, I've said this last week. I'm not against the hire. I was struggling with the draft picks. I was struggling with the way he left New Orleans. When he talks, when you listen to him on Fox, he just has a football way about him. That's certainly what bleeds through. So here he is. He's going to field some questions. Sean Payton's introductory press conference. Here he is answering questions from local reporters.
Front office, you worked with Mickey Loomis for such a long time. What goes into having a really good relationship between a coach and GM, and sort of what sort of started you off with George on that front?
Yeah, I think a couple things. Look, compatibility is the goal we talk about all the time with our staff. And so the individuals, their skill set, first off, is important. I use this term all the time. You know, you don't have to have a good sense of humor, but you have to be able to laugh at yourself. And so when I arrived in New Orleans for that first day, there was no one at the airport. And what I mean by that was the only person at the airport, aside from the pilots, was Mickey at baggage claim. And it was pretty raw still. And I remember that day feeling, as the day progressed, like, I kind of like this guy, and I liked his personality, but I kind of felt like, man, I like him, but not enough to where I'm going to come help him out with this mess. I mean, you know, it was challenging. So George and I first had a chance to meet then in L.A. For the last 3 days, probably worn a track out back and forth to each other's offices, and I feel the same way. I feel like I've got good instincts, and I feel like there's a demeanor with him that reminds me of Mickey in a good way, a very steady. And I've always respected the teams he's been a part of. I mean, Mike Zimmer and I, who was the head coach at Minnesota and spent a lot of time with George, Zimmer and I were under Parcells at Dallas. So they're, it's a small industry, but particularly in our case. And I think we hit it off kind of right away. And so there's, you know, we're similar. My first game that I ever was involved in a coach, I was a graduate assistant at San Diego State. It was 1988. I'll never forget. It was at the Rose Bowl. San Diego State versus UCLA Bruins. Troy Aikman was a senior on that team. What year were you?
Richard, freshman.
George Payton, it's spelled like Patton, but George Payton was on the field in that game as a redshirt freshman. And what I remember about that game, I don't think Troy Aikman had a ball touch the ground. They beat us 40-some-odd points to 3. But I just couldn't get over how great it felt to be on the sidelines as a coach. Mind you, I was a GA. I was getting Gatorade or sandwiches. But I'll never forget that first game. And so I think it's easy to say the relationship has to be good. It's harder for the relationship to be good. And I feel real fortunate early on to know that I think there's this myth that I'm this like tyrant that has to come into the building and control everything. And I'm like, where are you guys getting all this stuff from? I might be a tyrant once in a while though, but not a lot. Anyway, I really enjoy his company, and I think it works extremely well so far.
I wasn't calling you a tyrant. I was more curious than anything. And with Greg, first time going through this process and looking for a coach, what did you learn? How did things play out? How is it maybe different than the corporate world?
Yeah, very different from the corporate world. One, the media scrutiny obviously is at a different level than you'd have in any CEO search. I really enjoyed the process. I learned a lot. It was a bit longer than we expected. Part of that was the league rules. Part of that was the complexity of Sean's situation. with the Saints. But, you know, at the end of the day, we wanted to run a comprehensive process. We wanted to be open-minded. We met with 8 great candidates. You know, we learned something in each of those meetings. And so we came away from it feeling really good about the process. But the most important thing is where we ended up. And where we ended up is with the perfect coach for the Denver Broncos.
Yes, Sean, Mike Kliss, 9 News. There's a lot of discussion this year about Russell Wilson and his performance versus Seattle. I think you were asked about it a time or two on the Fox studio. As you studied film of him and you were preparing to take this job, where did you come down on where Russ is and how you yourself can bring him back to where he was before?
Yeah, look, there's a couple positions. You know, quarterback certainly is one of them in our league that gets scrutinized very well. And obviously, it wasn't the type of season he had wanted to have. I do feel like the last couple of weeks, we saw a little bit more of maybe what we were expecting or accustomed to. And I say we, you all, when you signed him. I think the number one job for us as coaches is in evaluating our players, what are the things that they do really well? And then let's try to put them in those positions. At least that's a starting point, and I think that's important to highlight their strengths. Then also to minimize maybe any weaknesses. Here's what I know. I know he's a hard worker. I know he's an extremely hard worker. That's important. And I think you take that, you understand the skill set. He's won a lot of games in Seattle. We played him quite a bit just because we were both playoff teams in the NFC at that time. And then you go from there. And I think that's the same case, although it's a much more visible position, it's the same case and the same goal for us with every player on this roster. What do they do well? It's easy to point out what players don't do well. And there's certain coaches that tend to look at it that way. But I kind of was taught early on, hey, what is it they do well, and let's have them do those things. None of us want to go – I don't like singing, period, but none of us want to be at a karaoke bar with a song we don't know the words to. So how do we get them comfortable and highlight their strengths? And that's the process that's going to begin right now is I'm learning about every one of these players, not just Russell.
Troy Rank from Denver 7. The first question is for George Payton. George, with the changing structure with the arrival of Sean, he talked a little bit about his compatibility with you. How do you see that working with Sean moving forward, and then to Coach Payton? You turned around the Saints in 1 year. I mean, they were coming up, I think, 3-13. Is it realistic for Broncos country to expect you guys to be relevant again in your first season?
Yeah. You want me to answer that question first? So, look, I don't like making predictions because I think that there's so much that goes into it. I think it's realistic for our fan base to expect a completely different type of culture, and I think it's realistic for them to expect us to win. Now, to what degree? I remember the 06 team, and we finished the preseason. We had to play all of our preseason games on the road, I think, because the Superdome wasn't ready, and then we had to open on the road for 2 weeks. And after the second or third preseason game, we'd gotten beaten pretty bad by Dallas, and I came into the locker room, and I sat down with Mickey. I said, we're not going to win a game with this team. And we ended up winning a lot of games. So I know this. The work has started. You know, this. I kind of use this term, you know, a little bit more anonymous donors this season, you know, where we're not, you know, you just know that we're working, but a little bit less visibility on social media and all those other things. Like, we're going to get to work, and ultimately it's how we do in the fall. So we kind of go from there, and then we kind of earn it with our fans, and we've got fantastic fans that will appreciate that.
Yeah, and Troy, you know, I met Sean, you know, for the first time, you know, in that first interview, 10 a.m. in Los Angeles, and I remember meeting him at the front, and we do have a lot of common friends and acquaintances, and it was very easy, you know, just the conversation. I felt like throughout the interview we were aligned on how we want to build this. Like-minded, and then, you know, throughout the process, a lot of follow-up calls just between, you know, between Sean and I, and you know, again, it was easy. And then we, you know, we hired him and then brought him here. And shoot, I'd pick him up at the hotel at 6 a.m. We'd be here late in the evening. And, you know, I don't know if we need to move our offices closer, but, you know, I spent a lot of time in his office. He spent a lot of time in mine. Obviously, this is a honeymoon period. We have a lot of work to do. But I do think we have similar philosophies, similar visions of how to build this team, and that starts today.
Hey, Sean, it's Arnie Stapleton from Associated Press. You touched on it a little bit in your opening comments about your year away in coaching. And I'm wondering, did that year away allow you to recalibrate, recharge, and as you come into this new opportunity, how different is it from your first opportunity in 06 with the Saints when you were a first-time head coach?
Yeah, look, there are some similarities that will exist always when you start new. And, you know for the early part of 6, 7, 8 months, whenever you go to sleep at night, your checklist won't be complete. That's just part of the deal. But it is different, too, relative to my experience. This program, this organization, where they're at compared to where we were in 2006, I will say this. When you're younger, I don't know that the level of gratitude exists, and I'm not giving my children a hard time with your generation. I'm not talking about that, but as you get older and wiser, you grow to appreciate the journeys, the relationships, with the players, with the people in the building. I think you all in the media will get the better part of me than the first group in New Orleans. I know many of you have talked to them already. They've told me. And they've all asked me to be as tough on you as I was on them in 06, 7, and 8. And so early on, when you start that process and you're young, you're not paying attention to your battery level. I don't play a lot of video games, but like I'm sure my battery level, my charge would have been expired. And as you get older, you begin to pick and choose, and you begin to realize maybe the things that are more important and the things that aren't as important. I'll be challenging, I'm sure, at times with this process in maybe many of your eyes. But everything, and I mean that everything, is because I think it helps us win more. And so you get a much clearer vision as to what's important, and regardless of whether you throw for 200 yards or what you do defensively or offensively, it's to win and to win and to win again. And so that becomes a little clearer with experience than it was for me at age 42 in 2006. But the excitement, you know, the feeling you get when you do win, or the pain you feel when you lose, that is exactly the same when you're 42 or 58. Those things don't vary.
Coach Eric Dalal at DenverBroncos.com. One for you, one for Greg. Coach, when you went to New Orleans and you started that turnaround, what were some of the tangible steps you took right away to change the culture that could be applicable here? And then, Greg, for you, was it important to find a coach who had been part of a turnaround like that before?
Yeah, great question. I was fortunate to spend my last three years as an assistant. I worked for Bill Parcells. Bill's in the Hall of Fame now. He's won 2 Super Bowls. And sometimes our bloodlines find us intentionally. Sometimes we're just a product of where we ended up, so we don't get to choose sometimes. You know, in other words, but for me, those 3 years were like law school. And he said this to me, when you go somewhere new, and he said, look, when you're going to New Orleans, you have to figure out what's kept them from winning for the last 30 years. You know, you're going to have 3 or 4 years, or else there's going to be another young coach with another navy blue shirt and coat and a suit on. Evaluate the people and go by what you see. So don't predispose yourself to any belief or thought. Just pay attention to what you're seeing in every area of the building. And so give it a fair run, because he said there are a lot of people where you're going that want to be a part of a championship program. They just happen to be caught up in dysfunction. Now, I don't think that's the case here. Obviously, it's much much different relative to the history and the tradition. But evaluate what we see, what we go by. George and I have said that already. Let's just go by what we see. There's a means to how everyone arrived here from a playing perspective. We have draft picks. We have free agents. We have undrafted free agents. And that's the method to procure the talent. Once they're here, none of that matters. Once they're here, we're going to go by what we see and who gives us the best chance to win. So, yeah, there was turnover in that first couple seasons. There were a number of players that ended up playing on our Super Bowl team in 2009 that were a part of that transition. It was difficult. It was uncomfortable. And I think, there are a lot of people that embrace and are comfortable with change, and then there are a few that aren't. And so I think just trying to have an open mind to the direction we're going, but a clear vision as to where. Open mind, clear. And then there's a little bit of old school mixed in with the new school. And so I'm not the 31-year-old coach who's got all these. There's something I have in the back of my mind relative to how I think we need to be successful that never changes. And those are things that I look forward to putting in place.
Zach Stevens with DNVR. Sean.
Well, let me answer the other part of that. So on the turnaround experience, certainly helpful, but for us it was more around the fact that he put a winning football team on the field just about every year for 15 seasons. And you don't do that without an incredible passion and intensity. As I called around and talked to others around the league, it kept coming up. It's the attention to detail, and I think one of your former players told me a story about the size of the towels in the locker room, and Sean didn't think the towels were big enough. But that level of attention to detail is what makes for winning organizations, and he's going to bring that energy and passion to every part of our building.
Sorry about that, Greg. Zach Stevens with DNVR. Sean, wanted to welcome you to Denver. And I have a question for Greg and George. There was a report shortly after that it came out that Sean was going to be the head coach here that said you were making a push for D'Amico right before that. Can you comment on that report?
I can comment. That wasn't the case. Again, we met with a number of great candidates through the process, but once we locked in with Sean about 5 or 6 days before we got the trade done with the Saints, our focus was entirely on him and closing that.
Yeah, I would just say, Sean was more complicated than the others, obviously. We would have had Sean done earlier, right, if we didn't have that other layer of the trade. And, with the trade, I just want to I did the trade with Mickey Loomis, and, first class all the way. Mickey's been one of the top GMs in the league for the last, 15 years or so, and just can't say enough about Mickey and the first class he showed to get the trade done. And the goal all along was not only to get Sean, but also to have it be win-win. Win for the Broncos, win for the Saints, and I think we accomplished that.
Romy Bean, CBS Colorado. Sean, it's clear you have very high standards, but when it comes to the men in your locker room, you're being willing to coach them, to guide them. What are your non-negotiables you have to have your players to be on this team?
Yeah, look, I think with any team or any organization, you have law and order, as Bill would say, and there's a certain unselfishness to being part of a team. And so you don't want to – you come in with your standards, but you're not coming in indicting anyone else's. You're just coming in with this is – how we're going to teach, this is how we're going to meet, this is how we're going to practice. And I'm not too familiar with maybe how that was in the last few years, 4 years or 5 years. And look, it's kind of one of those where, you really knock the rearview mirror off the automobile. We're just looking forward. There's been a lot of great coaches come through here. Look, every year in our league, there have been great plans with noble thoughts, and a lot of enthusiasm that don't have success that happens. Discipline, toughness, and football makeup and character is going to be real important for who is a Denver Bronco. I use this story, and it's a compliment, and I'm very comfortable
with it. When I got hired in New Orleans in 06, we just had to look at New England if we really wanted to see, you know, what the standard was. If we were making pizzas and there's a line around the block in front of their pizza parlor, then we might want to know what they're putting in their crust or their sauce. And I was lucky enough to coach in the Pro Bowl my first year. We went to the NFC Championship game, and it used to be when the Pro Bowl was a football game. It used to be the coaching staffs off the losing championship weekend coached the Pro Bowl in Hawaii the week after the Super Bowl. And it just so happened my first year it was the Saints, our staff, and it was the Patriots and Bill Belichick and his staff. So lucky for me, I get a chance to right away meet this coach Belichick. Now, I don't know who was in charge of the hotel lodging there, but Bill had a suite on the first floor, and then they put my suite with my two young kids jumping off the beds on the second floor, keeping Belichick awake. But I got to know him, practiced with that team probably four or five different times, and we studied closely how important intelligence was, communication, makeup, and that served us well later. And so there is an element of discipline, and there is an element of toughness, and look, it's not for everyone. It's not for everyone. And so, but that's the approach we'll take.
Sean Edwarder, ESPN. As you looked around at the opportunities that were available in this coaching cycle, to what degree were you convinced the Broncos were the one that offered the best chance to win sooner? And based on your conversation with George and whatever tape you've watched,
yeah.
What's your evaluation in general?
I think this, and I appreciate the earlier question relative to like really good coaches, D'Amico and Houston. I had a chance to spend time with four clubs. I was fortunate, I think, enough to be in that position where I didn't take for granted there'd be an opportunity, but I knew there was serious interest in it with a lot of clubs. I had gone on an interview in Carolina. I'd gone on one in Arizona. The first day that I could be interviewed, the 17th, Greg, George, and Condi were there, like, breakfast time, the very first day. And I knew that meant something. Houston, we did a Zoom call. That was all of the process was fantastic. What I was looking for, I felt existed in one place based on my exposure in with the other teams. And I also was in a position where, look, if it didn't work out, then, you know, we continue working at Fox and waiting for the next hiring cycle. This was the opportunity that I was interested in, and I know I was the coach they were interested in. Now, it was complex. So if any of you were involved in ownership and you were involved in trying to trade for a coach, certainly you would have a plan in place if those stakes were too high. I mean, I told Greg and George, here's the thing. They're making the trade, but it's like this trade impacts me, and if this trade is for this, then don't take it because I don't want to go if you lose that. Does that make sense? And so that's where these guys were fantastic. And, yeah, if you're in that position, you're on the phone with everyone because at any time it might not work. And so I think D'Amico was probably talking with Lewis Hamilton or something because I was on the phone with these guys the whole time.
Coach, Darren McKee from 104.3 The Fan. First of all, cool to see your son Connor here, star of Home Team.
He's right here. He's in scouting with TCU. They had a great semifinal game against Michigan. We celebrated that. We were at that game. And then it was a tougher game versus Georgia.
Well, you made a good quarterback switch in the movie, at least.
But
you did say when the Broncos welcomed you on Twitter, you said, time to work, hashtag details. I've heard about details quite a few times right here. I was wondering if you could provide any specific examples.
All right.
Of details that really
you want happen. Some fun details. So
yes.
We talked about the towels. I share this story, and at some point, someone here is going to ask about, hey, is it you or is it George drafting the players? Is it you or George cutting the team? Is it you or George? Mickey Loomis and I, for 16 years, and I mean this, I can't think of one challenging time we had relative to roster. Now, we might go into the office and discuss it, or one challenging time we ever had relative to the draft picks. But we go in and figure it out, and then certainly in a collaborative effort, handle that with Greg and Kerry, and that's the greatness of the teamwork. Now, we would fight like cats and dogs over these other details. So the towel thing was, you know, it was one of our playoff games, and I like that when every towel's in a seat, you know, 70,000, and it's distracted. We have a hard place to play, just like it's hard to play here. And the towels we handed out were like, they were kind of like the napkins you get after you have like a seafood, you know, they were just, and so I asked Mickey, I said, wave this towel, and he tried to, and I'm like, you have to dip it in water to wave the towel correctly. And so it might be the shoes players wear for a game. It might be, man, we'd win 4, 5, 6 games in a row, and, you know, Bill taught us that that's when complacency set in, and so nobody knows about the original. You know how the people glad hand you. So we had our ticketing department climb in through the aisles and just shake hands with every member of the team and not say a word, just say, you're doing a great job, doing a great job. We brought in mascots from other teams. There's a lot of things. If we're maniacal with the details on the field, then we have to be that way in every other element. The training room, the weight room, how we approach ticket sales. It everything matters. Like, you can't just say, oh, it's only this that's important, right? Everything matters. And so how we traveled, how we celebrated in the locker room. We bought a $30,000 stereo system, Club Dub, and we felt it was important, especially on the road, that everyone that could possibly hear our locker room celebrating, like, what is going on in there? And that is creating culture. And so with the right people, with the details, I could go on and on. We've got a ton of different stories.
George Stoya, Denver Gazette. Sean, there was obviously a lot of reports out there during the search. One I wanted to ask you about was one that Russell called you during this process. Did that happen? What was that conversation?
Yeah, he did. And when he called right away, I thought, man, I'm the last person that needs to get in trouble with the league. So we chatted. I coached Russell in the Pro Bowl, and so it's a very small community where you get to know these guys. And he lives real close to Drew and Del Mar, and Drew's like, man, Russell is wearing me out. And I said, Drew, we're going to give you a little spot in the program. We'll call you senior assistant of Del Mar. You know, that's where Drew lives. But, yeah, we spoke briefly, and Latavius Murray is one of my former players, and he's played with a number of teams. A super guy. You guys have had a chance to cover him. He's just you know, one of those guys you like being around, and we had a great experience with in New Orleans. And I had gotten a text right at the end of the season. He's like, man, we've got to find a way to get you here, me and my backfield teammate. So when I heard that, I thought of running back. So then I thought, who else is in his backfield? And I'm like, who's your backfield teammate? And then he sent, like, the number 3. And I said, it was Christmas time. And I said, well, be careful what you're asking Santa for. That was my response. So that we kind of go from there.
Did the orange tie mean anything on Fox?
It did. Okay. It did. It did. So some of you caught it, and that's the type of thing I'm thinking of. Like, this pocket tissue I'm wearing right now has an angle going upwards, if you can see it, if any of you can. And the horse, I believe, has an angle going upwards. And so this morning when I put it on, that's kind of symbolic about the direction we're heading right now. And, man, I know this, at the top, Wayne Gretzky used to say, the view never changes from the top. And that's where we're going.
John, Nick Kosmider with The Athletic. I've read that you tell coaches you're in the buying business when it comes to play call ideas. And I'm just curious what you gathered.
Well, I think when you say that, Jerry Jones said this once, it made a lot of sense. Man, we're always opening the door to be sold in a direction or moved in a thinking. Like, you know, the minute we ever stop opening the door, I think as educators, I can't think of the number of mistakes that I made when I first started coaching that I look back on now. And, well, how would my growth have been if I wasn't opening doors and looking at how to improve? So we're always in the business of trying to be better We constantly will look at, you know, the updated schedules. How can we be more efficient with our time? How can we teach better? And so, even in 06, what we taught or how we taught it changed dramatically to how we were teaching in 2020 or 2021. So, yeah, I am in the buying business just relative for improvement, and I think we have to be. Yeah.
Is in your role as an analyst and as you go into this as a play caller again, what did that experience of getting to watch the game in a slightly different way do for that process?
Yeah, you appreciate a couple things. You appreciate entertainment. So that's what I was in. You know, and so there's that old adage, don't let the truth get in the way of a good story, you know. I'm not saying, but it's different as an analyst. You're not vested the same way. The amount of time spent is much different. Now, I'll say this. The group I got the opportunity to work for, and that's Fox, was by far the best in the business. And they've been number one in their pregame shows. They have the Super Bowl this year. Tonight I'll be doing my last bit of work for Fox tonight and then Saturday and Sunday. So I'm kind of carrying two lunch pails here. I'm picking the Eagles. We never want anyone in our division to win anything, right? The perfect weekend for a Bronco fan is we get a win and the other three lose. But I think that it's more entertainment. You recognize you don't have as much time. You're coming on. Let's be clear, quick with our comments. Let's be enlightening. From a coach, it was nice because I could watch a game in the green room and Jimmy Johnson is in there, Michael Strahan, Kurt Menefee, Howie Long, Terry Bradshaw. I mean, these guys were like icons for me. And I get to sit here and like eat food and watch football games, you know. And so I'd be the last one that'd be like, hey, it's time for you to go. I'm like, all right, I got to go home. That was my football fix. Carissa, all right, working. Charles Woodson, Michael Vick, Peter Traeger, meeting him. I'm going to miss those people because they were so like welcoming to me. And they taught me, like, where do you put your hands when you're standing on TV? You know, sit up straight. You know, all the little secrets that you think you know and that are good enough for press conferences but aren't necessarily good enough for national TV. That was fun.
Okay, there we go. Sean Payton introduced as the 20th head coach of the Denver Broncos. We will recap some of that, some of the things that stood out, some of the things that get you excited, whatever. I want to get your text on this. First Advantage text lines 888-530-0043. Your thoughts on Sean Payton. George Payton talked a little bit there as well. Some interesting thoughts there. The Drew Brees thing, was he annoyed about Russ calling him or whatever? Because Drew's like, dude, he won't leave me alone. Like, what was that about? Towels are apparently a big deal when it comes to Sean Payton, so we'll talk about that. We are taking a break, right? We got to take a break here. All right, 11:49 the time. We're going to wrap up this hour. Plenty of Broncos talk. Plenty of talk from the weekend coming up in the 12 o'clock hour. So the whole show resumes on Northern Colorado's Voice 103.1 and 1310 KFK.
Sean Payton, it is. How are we feeling, Broncos country? Hear team talk and coverage every day on Northern Colorado's Voice 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Everybody, this is Dalton Reiser with the Denver Broncos, left guard number 66. You're listening to the whole show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
We just heard from Sean Payton. Thanks to Angel and Michael Kirkpatrick for making sure we got that press conference up and running, courtesy of DenverBroncos.com. So we were able to carry all of that. Wasn't really part of the plan this morning, but we made it part of the plan. Couldn't do that without you guys. So great work by our production crew. And, of course, Angel, who's running things on the other side of the bulletproof glass. Couple of things that stood out. Again, this is called nitpicky stuff. None of this really matters going forward, I don't think. I will say this. Was there clarity on... Okay, so he was asked by somebody if Russell Wilson called him. He said yes. He called. I thought when he called, great, this is the last thing I need is to get in trouble with the league. Because let's not forget, Roger Goodell and company are not necessarily big Sean Payton fans. So he's got to be careful here. When he said the thing about Drew Brees, was he talking about right now that Drew Brees was contacting Payton basically saying, dude, Russ won't leave me alone. Like, it's almost like Drew was kind of annoyed by that. Is that how you took that? It was confusing how he answered it.
Well, I was trying to place it because did he say it was around Christmas when he had this phone call? Because he had mentioned something about be careful what you
he had
ask
a, he
Santa.
Had a he had a chat with Latavius Murray around Christmas.
Okay.
That one was around Christmas. Russ was a couple of weeks ago, whatever. I just thought the Drew Brees thing was interesting. Like, was Drew Brees texting Sean Payton like, dude, freaking Russ won't leave me alone? Or was it just more of a jest that Russ really wants you, man? He wants you bad.
I think it might be both. I think Drew Brees might have actually got annoyed by Russell.
Is Russ going to be like, Sean, what are we doing? What are we doing today? What are we doing today? Can we watch film today? What kind of ties are we wearing? Are we wearing matching ties? You worried about the towels? I'm worried about the towels, too. I've kind of been worried about the towels, too.
Teacher's pet.
I don't know if it'll fly. Overall, great. Nothing I heard from that's going to make me go, oh, we made a terrible decision. There are just some things that I want to talk about. Some good things that came out of this, sure. I love the fact that he said the tie was on purpose. I like a little moxie there, a little attitude. I kind of like that. I'm in because I got no choice, bro. But we'll talk about it on the other side. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.